We've been through a lot. What a time it's been. Do you feel exhausted, like we've been through a war together? You know what? I think we need a love letter to ourselves.
Would it be okay if I were to tell you that I am afraid someday? So I call you up and you call me down. Would it be okay?
Well, hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of the Freed Hearts Podcast. I'm here. My name is Robert Cottrell, and I'm here, as always, every day with...
Susan Cottrell.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
We've been through a lot, not us personally, but all of us listening as a collective community. We've been through a lot here. What a time it has been. We've gotten through it. Many of us, many of you out there feel exhausted. And I just read on social media that it feels like we've been through a war together. And there's certainly a lot to do moving forward on the issues that we care about. For many of you out there in the LGBTQ community, I know there are a lot of times when you have experienced being told by someone that I love you, but, the infamous but, and that can be followed by statements like, I wish you were not here. I wish you were not part of our home. I wish you were different. Maybe I love you, but get out. I love you, but God is disgusted with you. And I just read this, and I wanted to read it here. I don't know where the quote is from, so I don't have the source of this, but it says, it's not as simple as listening for the voices inside of us, because sometimes the voices inside of us, which we've assumed speak truth, are just the voices of human beings who told us what to believe. Often the internal voice telling us who God is and what God approves of is not God, it's our indoctrination. It's an echo of the voice of a teacher, a parent, a preacher, someone who has claimed to represent God to us. Many of the people who have been well-meaning and others have only sought to control us. Either way, not a single one of them has been God's appointed spokesperson. Not a single one of them has more God in her than you do. And I think with everything that we have been through, with everything that we have heard out there and experienced out there, we need a love letter. Yeah?
Yes. Yes.
So today's episode is a love letter to me and to you. A love letter to ourselves. We need that now more than ever. And Susan, in episode 4, you defined love as love means to accept someone as they are with room for who they may become. But I know there's a lot more to say about that, about love.
Yes. Specifically self-love. Yes.
Yeah. You know, to accept someone as they are with room for who they may become includes us, includes accepting myself.
Yes.
With room for who I may become. So what is self-love and how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, here's the best thing about self-love is we are born with it. It unfortunately gets worked out of us in the culture, in our families, in our churches, in our schools. Things kids say to each other. It gets worked out of us, but the fact that it was born into us gives us hope that it can be recovered. You're not putting something foreign into yourself. I mean, just look at babies. They play with their feet and their butts and their poop, and they love it all. We've had kids. We know
not
what they do.
Not my kids.
And no baby ever looks in the mirror and says, oh, my hips are too big. They really are born loving themselves. Our daughter's girlfriend talked about her niece, I think it was, who put cream all over her own body and then licked it off. Like she just delighted in her body. And
there is a joke in that somewhere.
That we won't say, whatever it is.
Are you sure they weren't talking about her?
No. That is entirely possible.
Okay, that's a different episode.
But, you know, the world gets hold of us and just squeezes that out of us.
Yeah. Did you have a story about Natalie that I heard you tell recently? Was that something you wanted to share?
Yes. Yes.
I heard you talk about something here.
Yeah. She said when she was like, I don't know, 5, she was on the soccer team. And she said after the game, she said, the coach said, I'm really good, that I'm always at the right place, kicking the ball to the right place at the right time. And I said, did he say all that? And she said, no, but I could see it in his eyes. I love that. That is self-love in action. That's what she was reading into his eyes.
That's true. But you know what? We hear every day. We hear every day. We get emails and messages, and we hear every day the people who just hate themselves. themselves.
Yes.
Who are just so mean to themselves and so hateful to themselves.
Yes. With all the bullying that happens to them from all the sources, they become their own worst bully.
Mm.
We got a letter just the other day. In fact, we get a lot of them. But this one broke my heart. She was saying, I listen to your messages and I know now that I am homophobic, even though I'm a lesbian. It's hard to love others when you hate yourself. How do I learn to love me as a, and then she listed all the pejoratives she'd been called. I've fallen from Christ. I feel guilty for being gay. I feel less than God's best. I love my wife of 22 years, but I hate myself for being gay. And I have thought of death often. I'd rather die now than continue, quote, living in sin, as they say. Can you help me?
Wow.
Yeah. And I
went in 22 years married.
Yes.
For 22 years going through that.
Yes.
Those thoughts every day, every night for 22 years.
Yeah. And they apparently have not diminished. And I wrote back and I said some things, but she said, well, but you're affirming. That doesn't help me because you're affirming. I thought, well, what? So you're committed. You want freedom from this viewpoint, but you want it from somebody with your viewpoint. That won't happen.
To continue that a little bit, we used to have that viewpoint, and then our eyes were open. Our hearts were freed. Our eyes were open. But yeah, you know, that internalized homophobia is something we don't talk about very much, but it is prevalent and it is powerful.
And deadly.
And deadly. Yeah.
And the thing is, she internalized that whole list from other people, unkind and misguided people, really. But none of it is from God. But as you said, it feels like it's God. It feels like it's truth because it so resonates in your head. But you've forgotten who dispatched that message into you.
Yeah.
And it resonates around in there. But none of it is what God thinks about you or how God wants you to feel. None of it. So.
Yeah.
We have work to do to embrace ourselves.
Yeah, we talk about being nice and saying nice things in the mirror to yourself and things like that. But like I said in that opening quote, that the voices inside of us, it's difficult sometimes because we assume that they speak truth.
Yes.
But those voices are really just echoes of teachers, parents, preachers, someone who has claimed to represent God.
Yes.
And again, some of those people mean well.
Yeah.
Others do not mean well.
Yes.
But either way, and I love this line, not a single one of them has more God in her than you do.
That's right. That's right. I believe firmly that someone needs to be really hesitant to speak for God. And if they're going to speak for God, it better be empowerment and love. It better be love, kindness. Otherwise, zip it because it's not true.
I love when you get feisty, you get snarky.
Don't hurt my people. Don't hurt my people. That's
well,
what I'm saying.
If you think of all the sources out there, from bullies at school to media to social media to messages of inadequacy coming from marketing and all that kind of stuff, nobody needs more of this you're not good enough message.
Nobody needs more. There was a boy in school, Peter Fitzgerald. I'm not supposed to probably say his name.
Peter, but if you're listening, sorry.
Right. You've been called out here. But there was a girl in class named Kelly Dean. And he said, Kelly Dean is a smelly bean. I thought, oh, that's so very clever. You know, just what is accurate in that? But it didn't matter if it was accurate. It was demeaning. And that was good enough for him.
I was looking very hard for rhymes to Fitzgerald, but I couldn't come up with it quick enough. Maybe next episode. By the way, as we're going through this, I know we do talk about a lot of issues here that are deep. Sometimes the things that we say, the things we talk about, bring up questions in your mind. If you have questions about things that we say, if there are things that you want us to talk about, issues you want us to address, email us at podcast@freedhearts.org. And we will get to those. And we may even have an entire episode or two of like a mailbag.
Yes.
Of answering those questions. So how do we change that? What do we do?
Yeah. Yeah.
When I don't want to look in the mirror because I don't like what the voices are saying.
Yes.
Or I'm so certain that the negative voices are true and the voices, the positive things I say about myself seem phony. How do we relearn to love ourselves?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And let me interject. This is what I thought you were going to say, that we speak to the LGBTQ issue because that's how we got into this.
Mm.
An opening of all the boxes of our prejudice and our learned responses. But this applies if you're a person of color. This applies if you're female. This applies in all ways. that you have internalized being less than from what other people say.
And honestly, like we just touched on with all the messages that we hear, I'm not sure who doesn't feel less than these days.
Yes. You know? Yes. So, well, I wanted to say that when I came to peace around LGBTQ, I really had to lean into truth and kind of not taking things for granted. But I came to a point where my heart knew, and I had to learn to trust my heart, that it knew the difference between love and not love. And I had to trust that instead of what people were saying around it. So we really have to relearn how to love ourselves. Many of us are like children from a dysfunctional home. Mm-hmm. And if you adopt a child from a dysfunctional home who's been hurt, you really have to make up for lost time by loving them well. You need to smile. You need to do this with your own kids too, but to smile at them and hug them and tell them they're magnificent. That's what you'd want to do. We need to assume that everybody we meet has been hurt and is carrying burdens we don't know. And so kindness really rarely goes astray. And that goes for ourselves too. So we have to make up for lost time for all the demeaning and diminishing words and actions that have been perpetrated against us. Embrace that you and tell yourselves how much of a joy you are. So many of us grew up being microaggressed.
Yeah, I was just about to use that word, that a lot of people who are listening to this are part of the LGBTQ community. Many listening to us right now have children who are part of that community. And we talked about the messages coming from the media. A lot of those are microaggressions.
Yes.
They're passive messages that you are less than, so you need this car. You are less than, so you need to lose weight. You are less than, so you need this. And that's powerful enough. That has done a huge damage to us. So we look in the mirror and we don't see someone that is beloved, someone that is imperfectly perfect. But you add on top of that, like I said, those in the gay community who have been told directly, and you left out in the email you shared from the one person that struggled, you left out a lot of things that she said. She said, I've been called this and this and this and this, and I'm not even going to repeat those words. But you add on top of the natural microaggressions in our society, these direct aggressive aggressions.
Yes.
These things that you're told by those who are often really close to you, your parents or your friends. And then you're told them, saying that those people are speaking for God, that that's what God thinks. And it's just, it piles on. And a direct result of this kind of faith-based family rejection are things like depression and self-harm and substance abuse and suicide. The results are tragic. So the idea of learning, if we could see ourselves through different eyes, if we could see how beloved we are, it would change everything.
Yes. Yeah, we're told in large and small ways daily that our body should be different, our gender should be different, our skin color should be different, our sexuality should be different, or a ton of things should be different. Our aspirations should be different. So we have to slowly unravel those microaggressions with microkindnesses to ourselves.
I like that.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you drink coffee, they say that it kind of sucks the water out. So you have to drink twice as much water to make up for it. So I'm not on about coffee here, but the idea is
there's no caffeine in water.
That's true. I don't know unless you had it. So
you can do that. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
That's all right. So we have to assume that we need a lot of micro kindnesses to ourselves to flush out the microaggressions that we have internalized into our body and don't even remember that, don't even know it. And so we need to flood ourselves with that and create every opportunity. I tell you, this trip with cancer that I took, this journey really showed me the need for this, to take every opportunity to say, thank you, body. I love you. You're an amazing body. You carried me through an entire lifetime and you're still going. You're beautiful as you are. It wouldn't change a thing. I love my size, shape, color, preferences, quirks, everything. Mm. You can say those things out loud to yourself. I do. Why not? I always say good things to myself. And when I find myself saying a negative thing, I unravel it. I counter it on purpose with a positive, often the opposite of that negative thing.
And one thing too, the first step sometimes, and that is, we have never been a family that's been big on negative humor.
No.
And so we have tuned our radar and our kids' radar to hear that, to recognize that when it happens. And I think the same thing is true. We we say negative things about, I'm so stupid, or, oh, I'm what a dummy I am.
I physically cringe when you say those things.
Yeah. And we say them all the time. And I think one important thing is to tune our radar for those negative things that we say and think about ourselves.
Yes. I'm not talking about denial here. It's not like you're angry and you say, oh, I'm happy, 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 and you deny your anger. That's not it at all. But anger, for instance, or sadness, is just something that comes up to notify you that you need to attend to something. And then you experience it and you move through to whatever required action it's notifying you for. But I'm talking about negative things that we just say that just roll off our tongue. That's the kind of thing that we can start to be alert to and say the opposite.
Yeah.
And really speak to ourselves as we would somebody who's in recovery from abuse.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, we talk about a love letter to ourselves. It might even be a good idea to write this. I don't know if you're going to talk about that, to write something out. But it's very revealing to me that I can stand in front of the mirror. And because it bothers you, I won't say things.
No, you can say what you need to say.
No specifics. But I can stand in front of the mirror and I can say, oh, you're so, I don't like this, you're this. Or I can make a mistake and say you're, and that just flows off my tongue without any problem. I don't have any hesitation saying that. It feels natural to me.
Yes, because it was conditioned into you and me.
But to stand there and say positive things does not feel natural. And that's like, oh my gosh. It feels goofy, kind of, but it shouldn't.
Yeah.
It shouldn't feel that way. It should be natural because it is natural. Like you said, we've just not been conditioned.
Right.
It's about reconditioning, retraining, making that where that's the norm. That feels natural.
And it is a proactive thing to do. I grew up with those negative messages in a big way. My dad said negative things a lot. You're stupid. You're a failure. He said those things. And I'm sure a lot of people listening had the same experience. And so you have to make a proactive opposite. I had to take a stand. And I remember doing it as a teenager and into my 20s to say, I'm going to have a different life than the one I grew up in. And I did. I made proactive stands. And it takes a while to uncondition yourself and recondition. But that's what's ahead of us, to have the life we really want, to have the self-health, mental health that we really want.
In case anyone heard the horns honking in the background, that was someone agreeing with what you just said.
I thought so.
Yeah, we do record this in the corner of our place, and it overlooks a street. And so sometimes we will pause for a siren, but I'm going to let those horns just stay on there because that was affirmation that, honker. We get a lot of nasty things said to us on social media and in comments and things like that, but you get positive things said to you too.
I do.
And you read those and you take those in.
I do. I wrote a post when I was in seminary about Franklin Graham, and my professor passed me in the hall and she said, that was a brilliant post. And you know what I did? I went and I fully absorbed what she said. And then I went back and I reread the post and I enjoyed it all over again. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? If I'm not my own biggest cheerleader, why not? And when you can be that, you can be a big cheerleader to those you love around you. And it's so much more fun.
Yeah. Again, as you said that, if I'm not my own biggest cheerleader, then who is?
Yes.
And I've given that role. I've opened up that role and say, someone else take that role. And they may or may not take that.
Yes.
Or they may be a cheerleader with a lot of buts. I love you, but you're doing great, but. And so we need to reclaim that role of being our biggest cheerleader.
Yes.
So we have some control over the biggest cheers that we hear, what we're hearing.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I will say that it really does make a difference when you have somebody in your life helping you do that. And if you have someone who loves you well, be very thankful, because that is a real advantage and a privilege. But, you know, you say good things to me. You have our entire marriage, as I have to you. And that is built in me. Yeah. It's encouraged me to say those things to myself. And so it helps a lot when you have that.
Well, you're my biggest cheerleader, and I have given that to you. Sorry. But you say things to me.
No, but
you're so
it becomes a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Synergistic, whatever yes. that is. Yeah. yeah.
These are big words.
Yes.
We have an well, online dictionary. For now. You did go to seminary. All right.
kidding. I mean, I did go to seminary, but I'm kidding about all that. So it's like that idea, don't give me your fears. I have enough of my own.
Yeah.
And it's true. We do not need to absorb other people's fears, which is where negative comments are coming from.
Yeah.
As well as just being blind, ignorant of what they're saying and who they're saying it to.
Yeah.
But we can also really absorb the love and the good vibes. So I say if someone says something negative, reject it. If you need to hold out your hand physically or mentally and reject it, do that. Or say, I reject that. If they say something positive, absorb it, soak it in.
Mm.
Why not?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned this briefly, but our ability to love other people and to encourage other people in that way becomes easier and more powerful if we love and encourage ourselves.
Yes, it does.
In that way.
And remember, it's natural. It was inborn. It was just overwritten by conditioning, but it's underneath and it can be restored. It is the natural way to be, is to love ourselves. You're not putting something on. It feels like it, but you're really rediscovering a natural state of being.
That's a great reminder.
Yeah.
It is who we are, naturally.
Yes.
And part of this message from the culture and our families is they want us to be perfect.
Yes.
We're taught to strive for perfection, which is, oh my gosh, what the heck is that?
Yes. It's just a concept. It really is. So there's a verse in the Bible that says, be perfect like God in heaven is perfect. I'm like, oh, really? That's what you want from me? And or how are you doing with that? In the way that they're saying it, it's a ridiculous thing to say. But it's not what the word means. What the word means, perfect, is it means whole and complete.
Wow, that's totally different.
Totally different. So that means if I painted a piece of art and I'm done, I can say it's perfect. It's whole and complete. Does it mean it's perfect in some technical way? No, it means it's whole and complete. And when you can internalize that, it is so freeing. That means you're always perfect. You are just the way you're meant to be. You're growing. I'm growing. But we're exactly the way we're meant to be. So we need to deconstruct that word and reclaim it.
Wow. That's completely different.
Completely different. Yeah. And that perfection in the other way, like don't make any mistakes. I mean, you see it in the shows, the competition shows, American Idol,
yeah.
where they pick at every little tiny thing and you're in a competition for singing, for heaven's sake. I mean, we watch them. It's not like we don't.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that's part of the culture of perfection and how damaging it is. And it's a daily bombardment.
And well, and that's interesting. But you to talk about music, the singers that move me.
Yes.
Or that I like are the singers that move me.
Yes.
Not perfection.
Yes.
In singing. And it's almost, if you take that and say the people that move me or the people that are good to be around are the whole people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very good. I like that.
Not the perfect people, but yeah. if you just hear that word perfect and start to think of it when you hear it as whole,
mm-hmm.
the folks you want to be around are the whole people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they don't have their issues. Who doesn't have issues?
Right.
Yeah. But that natural state, I mean, a girl like Natalie, as a soccer player, she felt like a superb soccer player long before she had begun to internalize that her face isn't right, or her tummy isn't this way, or her ears aren't the same, or whatever it is we internalize. So, yeah.
And none of that's true, by the way.
None of that's true, of course.
Well, we've just come through a period of time where the word narcissist has been in the news a lot. Enough said on that. So what's the difference between self-love and narcissism?
Yeah.
It's all about me. It's all about me. I'm so wonderful.
Well,
what's the difference?
That all about me is not self-love. It is fear. It's fear that the good things aren't true about you.
It's just the opposite, actually.
It's the opposite. If I am really whole and complete, I'm perfect, and I love me, I'm naturally going to love you too. I'm going to see the wholeness in you too, and in you,
yeah.
and in you,
yeah.
and in you. But when I say, I'm the smartest person that ever was, I'm the best person that ever was, it's clearly self-aggrandizing. It's just to overcome fear complete inadequacy.
Yeah, those kind of things are in response to the things you say to yourself when you look in the mirror.
Right. They're in response. Yeah. It's an external response to an internal spout of fear.
Yeah, that's good. So what about We haven't mentioned hate at all, but everyone says they're loving. No one says they're hateful. Everyone says, I don't hate anybody. I love everybody. I don't hate anybody. So where does hate come in all of this?
Yeah, it's really a good question. So I'm thinking now of a friend who told me this. She said, the last words my brother said to me were, I don't care if you live or die. And if you do die, you should go to hell and stay there. She said, that's my brother, the minister. And she, yeah.
Wow.
And all this after she tried to hold him account for the abuse he had perpetrated, which he refused to acknowledge. And when confronted with it, he would have none of it. And I have seen so many Christians, sorry, but it's true. I've seen so many evangelical Christians who have that same posture.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell me where I'm wrong. And that is not self-love either, to say I am right about this 100% and I don't want to hear from you about it. That's just posturing. That's just certainty to cover over intense fear of a world we can't control.
How do we protect ourselves from people like that? How do we respond? I know part of me that I've learned over this, especially the last 8 years of doing this work, has been that, you know, when I hear people say things, I realize they're just repeating something that they've been taught.
Yeah.
And has nothing to do with me. We say that a lot to LGBTQ people that have been rejected by even those closest to them. It's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about a fear in the person who's saying that to you.
Yes.
So I know that even those hateful, awful words that her brother said to her revealed everything about him.
Yes, that's all. It revealed nothing about her.
Yeah.
It only revealed something about him.
It still hurts.
Right.
It still hurts, but that sometimes takes the power away to have your anger be at the system or the teaching, not the person, or understand that their speaking reveals much about them and their pain.
Yes. So here's my advice on that question. And the more you can internalize this, I think the freer you'll be. So let me just intro this by saying, we said, be perfect as God in heaven is perfect, meaning whole and complete. We read in the Bible in John, the book of John, that God is love. And God is basically love looking for a place to happen. And you are that place. And so to be whole and complete, the way God is whole and complete, is you put your 2 feet down solidly and you stand on them and you determine that you are love. That you are love looking for a place to happen, and you love you, and you love people that come into your life. And that love, again, is to accept people as they are with room for who they may become, which means if someone comes into my life, I am love extended to them. If they can't receive it, if they're hate back at me, then I'm still love. It doesn't mean I go to lunch with them or whatever, but I just can bless them mentally and let them be. I don't have to become unloved because they're unloved. And that I'm telling you, this is a very high calling that I'm inviting you into. It's to be love and looking for a place to happen, which is every place. And wrapping yourself, if you have any kind of faith and God, if that's a good thing for you, then wrap yourself around that God that you know. And if not, that's okay. You don't need that.
Yeah.
But you be love looking for a place to happen. And we'll talk in another episode about, well, then what do we do when people are, my family's rejecting me and being hateful?
Yeah.
We'll actually address that specifically. But just for now, you get to be love looking for a place to happen. And you don't have to accept unlove into your life. You just continue to be who you are.
Oh, what a gift. That's beautiful. So that's our love letter to you. And we usually end by saying, you are beloved.
Yes.
But this time, I'm going to end by saying, I am beloved. and so are you.
Excellent.
We'll see you next time.
Would it be okay if I were to tell you that I am afraid someday? So I call you up and you call me down. Would it be okay?
You've been listening to the Freed Hearts Podcast. We have extensive resources and vibrant community for you at www.freedhearts.org. Just come say hello. And if you have questions or issues or comments about the podcast, things you'd like us to talk about, reach out to us at podcast@freedhearts.org. The music is provided by Hannah Cottrell, our daughter, the Grammy-nominated Saint Sinner. And you can find out more about her at heysaintsinner.org. www.thebestofyourself.com. Please share this, subscribe, and follow on your favorite platform. And thanks for listening.